Good morning, Justices. May I please the court with my arguments? My arguments are straightforward. Let me try to recap the whole case as I see important to recap for your honors. So in January 5th, 2018, I filed for Chapter 11 case while being in the pending litigation against Seika Epson Corporation and Epson America, where I was defendant among other about 16 defendants. As of March 8, 2018, which is about 3 months later, the case got converted from Chapter 11 to Chapter 7 liquidation, and immediately after that, trustee was assigned, and trustee was hiring her team, which one of the team members was the professional hired by this for the estate and for the trustee was Fox Rothschild LLP. Fox Rothschild LLP, my argument is the Fox Rothschild LLP was not a disinterested party, which should not make that party qualified because they, as they stated under oath in their, stated in their declaration signed under penalty of perjury by Michael Sweet, general counsel for trustee and for the Akashkaldas estate. Fox Rothschild basically essentially was representing Epson in many other unrelated to these bankruptcy matters. And next what happened is that the Fox Rothschild LLP has been involved in almost every single step in resolution of all matters between Seika Epson and Kashkaldas estate. As I have said in the very beginning, in that bankruptcy, Kashkaldas estate, at first Kashkaldas was a part of the litigation where against the Epson, and then after filing for bankruptcy and after assignment of the trustee took that role. So trustee was in the litigation against Epson. And having the Epson's counsel representing trustee, it of course resulted in a very unexpected way. First, they signed a stipulation trying to resolve and trying to basically, what I'm trying to point out over here is not what the stipulation meant, but rather the Fox Rothschild's involvement, which simultaneously was representing trustee and Kashkaldas estate in bankruptcy case and in many other unrelated cases, Epson. Next thing, which shows the undisputed involvement of Fox Rothschild LLP while representing both, was a dismissal of the wrongful seizure action, which I commenced, as it turned out to be wrongfully, in the Central District of in the District Court of Central California. And that case was dismissed not as a bankruptcy court ordered. Just the bankruptcy court ordered it to be dismissed by the trustee, but it was dismissed with prejudice. And immediately right after the dismissal, I filed my motion to abandon, and that was abandoned to me, the right to abandon to me. I don't think that the judge meant that go ahead, dismiss it with prejudice, and then we will abandon it. It was a surprise for everybody that the case was dismissed by Fox Rothschild against Epson, and the dismissal was with prejudice, leaving me no way to prosecute it further. After abandonment, I did try to prosecute that. I did try to set aside to that dismissal with prejudice, but I was not successful. That case is pending appeal right now before the Ninth Circuit. Next thing, of course, that I was complaining about Fox Rothschild being not as interested. I was trying to remove Fox Rothschild and about the trustee. And that brought us all to the second appeal we're not going to be discussing right now. We're going to be discussing later on. To summarize, I claim that I have a personal injury which is separate from all of the other creditors to the extent. The reason I say to the extent, I'm sorry. The reason I say to the extent, because there is a certain amount that of the claim against the trustee and against the Fox Rothschild that that I can, if I prevail, I would be able to get, that amount would not be of interest of any other creditor. And the reason for that, because there is a priority IRS claim filed with Kashkalda's estate, which, as far as I understand, no other creditor is going to get paid unless and until that claim is going to be satisfied in full.
Therefore, the IRS would get paid.
I'm sorry?
But my understanding is you're arguing about the IRS, right? The IRS would be paid and that you're liable for that despite your bankruptcy.
That's right. That's right. And that's why, as far as I understand, that's why it's a priority claim, meaning that all of the funds of the estate are distributed, are prioritized to pay off IRS debt. And only if there is a leftover, then it distributed among the less prioritized creditors.
But the problem with that argument, it doesn't negate the fact that the IRS is a creditor. It's just a classification of a creditor.
It does not...
Your injury is still the same. I mean, it's the damage to the payment of your creditors and that creditor class.
But my argument is that let's assume there's going to be $1 million in the estate, or let's compare two situations: $1 million in the estate after all of the claims, regardless against trustee or anybody, or let's say $200,000. Because IRS has a priority and it's going to be the only party who is going to be paid, other creditors have no interest in that. In other words, if that lawsuit against trustee, which I'm trying to get the possession of the right to pursue, other creditors have no interest. They are part of the creditors, but they have no interest at all in that. Besides, of course, Seiko Epson, against who is one of their possible future defendants. Seiko Epson has interest not because they are part of all of the creditors, but rather because it can be subject to their that possible litigation that I'm trying to gain rise to. So to address your argument, I do, as far as I understood, you're saying that they all creditors and priority doesn't matter. I think in this particular situation, my argument is it does. And that's basically my argument, and I truly believe that if I would be on the place of the creditor, and for me personally, it's not going to result in any funds, I'm not going to be even saying anything if it's not even a possibility to benefit from that. And not just benefit, net benefit, meaning that it might be very small benefit, but the cost to participate in the court proceeding might not make sense. That's my basic argument, and that's how I assert that this is my personal. Yeah, whether you agree it or not, but that's at the moment. I'm open to hear that. So all of that seems very unjust and wrong, and I think that I am the one who suffered already from dismissal with prejudice of the wrongful seizure action. And the fact that it was wrongfully filed or rightfully filed, it should be irrelevant for the purpose of this one. The trustee has a duty of care to all of the assets that I gave. And as an example, actually, I'm going to stop right here. I see the clocks. Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, appellees, how are you going to split your time?
Good morning, Your Honor. Mr. David will take 5 minutes, and I will take 10, although I do not believe I will be speaking for 10 minutes.
All right. So, Mr. David, I think you're
going to
go first.
Actually, I think Mr. Priscellus was going to go first.
Oh, all right. Fine. Thank you, Mr. Priscellus.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Jack Priscellus for the appellee, the Chapter 7 trustee for Mr. Kashkalda's bankruptcy of state. I want to start and possibly end with standing. I think as Judge Spraker kind of drew out from Mr. Kashkalda, the claims that Mr. Kashkalda, you know, wants to assert are derivative claims that, should they exist, would be claims common to all creditors in the bankruptcy case.
Who has standing? Who has standing to challenge the trustee's administration?
Well, I believe Mr. David will be addressing that, and I believe that went through. I think Mr. David's argument is that a successor trustee would challenge how it had gone, what had happened.
That can't be. So the only way to bring an action against the estate is to remove the trustee, which has been sought here, and then have that successor do a forensic analysis and bring an action. So let's take the worst example. A Chapter 7 trustee commits embezzlement. It harms the estate. None of the creditors and the trustee and the debtor in a surplus case could not sue that trustee for embezzlement because it is a harm to the constituent class that trustee is supposed to serve?
I agree with the premise of your question that under those circumstances there would be a party that would be able to challenge that concept. I think in this case, Mr. Kishkalda rather clearly sets forth that his complaint is all about the administration of this bankruptcy estate that happened in front of this bankruptcy court. And I do believe that Mr. Kishkalda's argument falls right into the Stoll case that was cited in the trustee's papers.
But that brings me back to my question: is who can sue? I mean, Stoll says basically, you stands for your point. I mean that the successor trustee who existed in that case could, but what happens if there's no successor trustee?
It seems like we have to go to the Kashani factors really to determine whether or not the lawsuit can be brought.
Well, and I do believe that the Kashani factors, you know, in this case make quite evident that it does not make sense for, and it would have not been appropriate for the bankruptcy court to have allowed this case to proceed in a different forum. I do want to remind the panel why the bankruptcy court is entitled to significant discretion here. The order that's been appealed here is docket entry 949. And at that point, this bankruptcy case was 2 years old. The bankruptcy court has a years long investment in this case that entitles its decision to deny, pro se Mr. Kishkalda permission to sue the trustee and her court appointed professionals in a different forum. Significant deference. I won't repeat our analysis of the Kashani factors, which is on page 22 of our brief. But I just want to reiterate that when you look at the Kashani factors and you look at Mr. Kishkalda's claims, they all concern what happened in this bankruptcy case and the bankruptcy case's administration in front of this particular bankruptcy judge. And for that reason, it wouldn't make any sense whatsoever to litigate those claims in front of another judge in another court. I think that the Kashani case, sort of stands for the proposition that bankruptcy, if you have claims related to the administration of the bankruptcy court, they happen in bankruptcy court, not in a different court.
So counsel, can I ask a question? And that is, are you suggesting that he doesn't have standing to bring the claims, or that he doesn't have standing to appeal the denial of his motion that the bankruptcy court refused to grant him leave? In other words, are you suggesting that we don't have jurisdiction and we should dismiss the appeal, or do you want us to affirm the order of the bankruptcy court?
Well, I think that the bankruptcy court order should be affirmed. Based on the bankruptcy court order doesn't actually ask the standing question, and if the court isn't comfortable addressing it, you can affirm the bankruptcy court's order, which is an exercise of her discretion. It's, she in detail, painstaking detail, lays out why she exercised her discretion in denying Mr. Kishkalda permission to bring this action in another forum.
But she finds, doesn't she, that the reason that he shouldn't proceed is because he didn't establish a prima facie case to be able to demonstrate that there was a basis for the action to proceed anywhere, because all of the objective factors that he listed hiring Fox Rothschild, allowing the Caesar judgment to be dismissed, all those rulings she had already previously made and had determined against him, right?
My understanding of the order that was sought in this bankruptcy case and the order that was entered is that Mr. Kishkalda was denied permission to bring this action in another forum.
Or to remove the trustee.
Correct. And that is the scope of the order that's on appeal. You're correct that the analysis that the bankruptcy court used in coming to that conclusion was essentially that she had previously rejected all of these theories of liability, you know, repeatedly. Unless the court has any further questions for me, I don't have any further argument on this matter.
All right. Any more questions? All right. Mr. David, go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court, Henry David on behalf of Seiko Epson Corporation and Epson America Corporation. I concur with Mr. Porcellis's points. The only point we made in our brief, or below, to be honest, was not so much a standing issue as whether Mr. Kishkalda, whether the procedure that he wanted, which was he, the debtor who's been denied his discharge, acting in pro se, could bring these claims in another form. And our point was that's just not appropriate, that the appropriate procedure would be if Judge Blumensteel concluded that there was some merit in Mr. Kishkalda's point to remove the trustee, appoint a new trustee, and that trustee could investigate and decide whether it made sense to pursue these claims. Alternatively, the court could have authorized others to do it. Bank of America is owed $500,000. The IRS has a $1 million priority claim. Whether that's the right amount or not has yet to be determined, but it asserts such a claim and it has prima facie validity. So if there was
playing this out, counsel, I mean, Mr. Kishkalda his situation makes an interesting argument because you have now denied the discharge for any claim. So theoretically, these creditors all retain their rights to go after Mr. Kishkalda. He would prefer that they presumably get paid in bankruptcy. So, you know, that in some ways, you know, heightens his interest here and lessens the interest of the creditors because they retain their rights to go after him despite the bankruptcy.
I would agree with the first point, i.e. that he has a heightened interest due to the non-dischargeability. Indeed, for that matter, I have not evaluated, but my guess is the IRS claim is at least non-dischargeable independent of denial of the discharge.
That's all moot now because you have 727 action, yeah.
Exactly. But the creditors would likewise benefit from the estate having additional assets. Mr. Kishkalda's gone through bankruptcy. He may or may not ever have any assets. If there were another, he claims there's $1 million that the estate could obtain if these claims were pursued successfully. I don't agree with that, but if that were true, that would benefit the creditors, the IRS in the first instance, and the general unsecured creditors such as Epson and Second Trust. So this is not any different in the sense that the creditors have the direct interest, and the debtor, if at all, has an indirect interest. And yet the debtor generally does not have standing, is generally not given standing to pursue these claims. Representatives of the estate are given those rights, and those claims are generally heard in the bankruptcy court. And Judge Blumensteel is well within the exercise of her discretion to say, Mr. Kishkalda isn't the right plaintiff, and another forum isn't the right place to do it. And by the way, there is no valid claim here. All those were perfectly appropriate findings of fact and conclusions of law and exercise of discretion, and the order ought to be affirmed.
Let me take you in a little different direction. I don't know if it's appropriate to ask you or to ask Mr. Prezelis. The briefing indicates that or makes a point that the basis for the suit has already been decided and therefore and trails off. What exactly is the significance of the prior decisions? Do they bind us? Is that dispositive or not?
Well, you would need to go through each of Mr. Koshkaller's claims to really do that analysis.
I understand, and I'm asking in a more generalized section. Do you believe it's preclusive, or something less?
I think it is in fact preclusive. I think there's issue preclusion for example, when Mr. Koshkaller says that. Well, let's take the stipulation regarding the automatic stay. Yes, we signed stipulations with both trustees in both estates with respect to resolution of the automatic stay. What Mr. Koshkaller forgets to point out is Judge Blumenstiel rejected that stipulation and instead ruled on our motion for automatic stay. Not that it's relevant. She actually gave us more relief than the stipulation would have, but that's not the point. The point is, yes, both trustees signed off on the stipulation, but there was never an order on that stipulation. And therefore, there's no harm there. Likewise, with respect to the dismissal of the wrongful seizure action, the wrongfully filed wrongful seizure action, Mr. Koshkaller went back to Judge Blumenstiel and said, hey, Judge, they dismissed it with prejudice. I don't think that's what you meant. She goes, no, that dismissal is consistent with what I said, and it's fine. By the way, he didn't appeal that ruling by Judge Blumenstiel. So every claim that he purports to assert or requests to assert against the trustee and her professionals already has been addressed by Judge Blumenstiel and is pursuant to a final order.
Let me ask you, are all of those matters subject to final orders? Because I seem to recall that this court has sent a number of those back when they've appeared in front of us recently as interlocutory.
Certain, Mr. Koshkaller has raised those issues so often, they are subject to both. Some of them are subject to non-final orders that he appealed and you dismissed, but then he raised those same issues in other orders, in other proceedings, and those were final orders. So again, one would almost have to do a chart of every complaint by him and cite the order. But I believe, not that his complaint was as clear as that I can say with certainty, I understand everything he was saying, but to the extent I understand it, everything he did was subject to a final order, as well as in some instances, not final orders.
Thank you.
Unless the court has additional questions, I cede any additional time I have, which I can't see a clock, so I don't know if I have any.
You have about 40 seconds, so.
Then I'm not ceding much. Thank you.
All right. So, Mr. Koshkaller, we'll go back to you for your rebuttal. You have 6 minutes.
Your microphone's not on.
You're on mute.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry for that. Thank you very much. Yeah. I would want to reiterate one argument that Mr. Henry David just said. Among others, but this is the I want to start with. Epson said, Mr. Henry David said that I haven't appealed one of the orders, and I have a feeling that I should have, based on his arguments. While the next appeal we're going to be discussing next, that I filed too many appeals. So it's not clear for me whether it is I filed too many appeals or too few appeals. And that's just one of the points we're going to be discussing further, because it seemed to me that I'm here right now in the litigation not against Seiko Epson and trustee of Fox Rothschild. It seems not litigation, in this dispute, but it seems that I'm here against Judge Blumenstiel. And as you may recall, and I reviewed your decisions, dismissals, I did appeal most of those orders, and they are still going to be pending further decisions upon the final determination. So my point is that I disagree. I do respect the court's orders, but I truly disagree with that. And I think that my right to appeal remains that issue at question, regardless of the merits, but at least at question, which gives me the right to claim over here, to seek the relief I am seeking right now in this motion. And
sir, isn't that really the nub of it, is that you're using this request as kind of a proxy or instead of the appeals? You're challenging the same orders you want to appeal as the basis for your prospective lawsuit.
Honestly, I didn't understand your question. If you can paraphrase it, I would highly appreciate that.
Sure. Everything that you walked us through in your discussion is inherently within the administration of the bankruptcy, right? Whether to approve a settlement, whether to approve abandonment, allowing the trustee to do that. And you've appealed, you have either appealed or indicated your intent to bring another appeal for those matters. But at the base, those have already been decided against you. Those have already been raised and decided. And now you ask us to allow you to sue the trustee in a different court to decide those same matters. But really, is it the right resolution to ultimately get to your appeals?
Your Honors, I don't know how it should be, but I have an opinion on the general situation. I filed, and this bankruptcy, at first being filed as Chapter 11, then converted to Chapter 7, was filed because of Epson. It was resulted from the litigation with Epson. When I say because, litigation arising from the Epson. And then Epson's lawyers were allowed to be entered, and they were dictating everything in this proceeding. Epson took over the whole court and all of the proceedings. And of course, the judge would be deciding in favor of your trustful trustee she has been dealing for years. But in reality, it was Epson's lawyers who were presenting those arguments. I was powerless at that point. Let me bring you one hypothetical example. Imagine there would not be a litigation against Epson. It would be that Epson would be claiming that I owe them not $12 million, but $12 billion without litigation. Irrelevant why. And then if Epson's lawyers are hired, they accept everything as is and they start to follow any single claim. I believe it was Mr. Henry's Davis, but I might be wrong. It might be Jack Pritzelis. There are other creditors who could benefit. But if the Epson's lawyers accept the claim, the whole claim, the huge claim, it's not the amount that matters that Bank of America has $500,000 or $600,000, but the ratio. And coming back to my hypothetical example, if they would be accepted unchallenged by Epson's lawyers, $12 billion without any cause, then regardless of whether it's going to be 600, 1 million or 2 million by other creditors, they are meaningless ratio-wise, they are meaningless. They have no interest, they cannot even rely, because everything that's going to be over that amount is going to be proportionally distributed, which is almost nothing. Coming back to our situation, I felt that in this bankruptcy, I have done everything I could in order to bring to the judge the situation that I see from my side, whether it was correctly or not, but it's my opinion, and I should be entitled to say that. And I disagree with a lot of orders, and all of those orders that were against me, but all of those orders were made based on the, I hope it's not going to sound in a negative way, based on the poisoned arguments by Epson's lawyers who were allowed to participate and to represent the trustee. The question here...
You're basically saying that Epson, that Fox Rothschild controlled what went on? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm trying to say that, of course, trustee is the one who was supposed to supervise. But when you allow the non-disinterested counsel to be in, there is no clear... You cannot distinguish one from the other, because once you allow the opinion which has a different interest, there is no, it's when you boil a water and you spill a small drip in something, you cannot distinguish anymore. So So what I'm saying here all is that trustee should have not hired no disinterested counsel. And if she did, and then she failed after numerous notifications to cure that, I should have the right to pursue that, and no other party would be interested. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. So this matter will stand submitted. Madam Clerk, would you please call the next case?